We're continuing with Brahma's Prayers, Canto 10, Chapter 14. And yesterday evening we completed verse number 34. The prayers go through text 40. And this evening it's 35. So the background, for those that are joining that aren't so familiar with this portion of the Bhagavatam, Brahma has been shown by Krishna the unlimited opulences and potencies after stealing the calves and cowherd boys, etc. He was given the privilege of seeing what he wanted to see, the extent of Krishna's mystic power is without limit, unlimited. And he offers prayers after seeing what he saw. And the section that concludes his prayers is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur calls a plunge in the ocean of prema. He's appreciating the resident of Vrindavan like anything. And yesterday evening verse was, he was praying to Krishna that he may take birth as a blade of grass in Vrindavan. Or if not in Vrindavan, outside of Vrindavan, near Vrindavan, in the suburbs. of Vrindavan, where he could catch some of the dust from the feet of the devotees. So we're going to hear something more about that in this evening verse. But of relevance to this evening verse is a verse spoken by Uddhava, when Uddhava, much later in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, is sent by Krishna to Vrindavan to carry a message to the gopis. And Uddhava's experience, he had never gone to Vrindavan, but once experiencing the love of the residents of Vrindavan, he understood, because he was most learned, as his Brahma, he understood their love is the most exalted. And he also wanted dust from their feet. But he figured, if I ask the gopis for dust from their feet, they're too shy, so they'll run away. Better to not embarrass them. Let me just become a blade of grass and they can trample on me. Then I can get some dust from their feet. Or maybe some dust will fly in the air as they're passing by and land on my head, and I can receive the dust from their feet. So that was spoken by Uddhava and then spoken again, or the same wish or prayer to Krishna is spoken by Brahma. And these two, Brahma and Uddhava, are super intelligent. And their intelligence told them that the love of the resident of Vrindavan is the most exalted thing in existence. So that's their authorities. We should understand from their authority what they're saying is true. And then this verse 35 also very much resembles a verse that was spoken by Uddhava in Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 3, Chapter 2. And that verse is when Vidura was on pilgrimage, and Vidura met Uddhava, he naturally, seeing Uddhava, he thought of Krishna. They even look alike, but they're outside of Vrindavan. Uddhava is the most intimate associate, so seeing Uddhava, he thought of Krishna. He asked about Krishna, and there's this celebrated verse spoken by Uddhava, where he says, "Oh, evil Putana, who offered her poisonous breast to Krishna to drink it with the intention of killing him, attained the position of a nurse in the spiritual world. Who else is so merciful? I surrender unto him." Of course, there's different translations of that. Even Putana received Krishna's mercy to be elevated to the spiritual world. So therefore, the question is being raised by Uddhava, who could be more merciful? Is it possible that someone can be more merciful? Who is a better master than Krishna, who just even the slightest, she just dressed like a devotee and acted in the role of a mother, although her intention was to kill Krishna, just that little service, she became an eternal resident with Mother Yashoda in the spiritual world. So who can be a better master? That was Uddhava. And then text 35 of Brahma's Prayers is similar, not the same, but the mood is similar. He says, Brahma says, "My mind becomes bewildered just trying to think of what reward other than you could be found anywhere. You are the embodiment of all benedictions which you bestow upon residents, these residents of the cowherd community of Vrindavan. You have already arranged to give yourself to Putana and her family members." Her family members were Baka and Agasura. They were brothers, Putana's brothers. Bakasura and Agasura. The three Asura family. Not a nice family. "You have arranged to give yourself to Putana and her family members in exchange for her disguising herself as a devotee. So, what is left for you to give these devotees of Vrindavan, whose homes, wealth, friends, dear relations, bodies, children, and every very lives and hearts are all dedicated only to you? How are you going to reciprocate? You look what you did with Putana. You gave her an eternal residence in the spiritual world just because she dressed like a devotee and tried to kill you. What are you going to do with the residents? How can you reciprocate with them beyond giving yourself to them? And you've already given yourself to them." So that's his astonishment. And the answer is, the message is, the residents of Vrindavan, by their dedication, singular, focused, intense, total dedication to Krishna, they've conquered Krishna. So one of the names of Krishna, that he's unconquerable. You know that name of Krishna? Krishna's not conquerable. Ajita, right? Ajita. So, we're going to make reference to text number 3 from this chapter. Text number 3 of chapter 14 in Brahma's Prayers is a celebrated verse. We're going to go circle around back again to 10:14:3. Gane prayasam udapashyan amanta eva. You know that verse? You've heard of the verse? Jivanti sanmukaritam bhavadiyavartam stanes tatakshur tigatam tanavanmano bir ye prayaso jitajito pyasi taistrilokyam. Celebrated verse. In that verse, Brahma is saying, he who is unconquerable becomes conquered by the love of the devotees, by those who dedicate themselves, and at least becoming a devotee, as they dedicate themselves to hearing topics of Krishna. Just like what we're doing right now, we're dedicating ourselves, striving, to dedicate ourselves to hear topics of Krishna. So this verse, Gyane Prayasam, etc., is spoken of in Chaitanya Charitamrita. We mentioned this when we were just going through the prayers, the earlier part, but repeating it now. The question of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Ramananda Roy was, what's the goal of life and how to achieve it? Two things. What's the goal of life and how to achieve it? That's a good question. What's the goal of life and how to achieve it? So Ramananda Roy suggested a number of things. If you want, because of time, I'm not going to read it just now, but I encourage you, you'll go read the purport to Madhya Lila, chapter 8, text 67. 867 of Madhya Lila. This verse is quoted, and the translation, Prabhupada's translation, right here in Chaitanya Charitamrita. My dear Lord, this is Brahma to Krishna, those devotees who have thrown away the impersonal conception of the absolute truth and have therefore abandoned discussing empiric philosophical truths should hear from self-realized devotees about your holy name, form, pastimes, and qualities. They should completely follow the principles of devotional service, surrendering themselves fully with body, words, and mind. Tanuvan Manobir. Surrendering themselves fully with body, words, and mind. They can live in any ashram or any social status. Staneshtatak. Indeed, you are conquered by such persons, although you are always unconquerable. So Krishna becomes conquered. The unconquerable Krishna becomes conquered by those who engage in their prescribed duties, staying in their position, and engaged in hearing from qualified sources and abandoning speculation. So here's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's reply. This is all right, but still, can you speak more on the subject? Ramananda Roy then replied, ecstatic love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the essence of all perfection. As long as there is hunger and thirst within the stomach, varieties of food and drink make one feel very happy. Similarly, when the Lord is worshipped with pure love, now this is the residents of Vrindavan, they worship the Lord with pure love, the various activities performed in the course of that worship awaken transcendental bliss in the hearts of the devotees. And next, pure devotional service in Krishna consciousness cannot be had even by pious activity in 100,000 lives. It can be attained only by paying one price, that is, intense greed to have it. If it is obtainable somewhere, one must purchase it without delay. This is devotional service beyond regulative principles. That's the residents of Vrindavan. I mean, they observe principles, but their devotion is beyond the restrictions of the spontaneous service is very, very special. Mm. Pure devotional service cannot be attained by empiric philosophy, nor can perfection be attained simply by good association. Devotional service by self-realization is a different subject matter. It is untouched by fruit of activity, for one surrenders the results of activities to the Lord, abandons prescribed duties, and accepts the renounced order of life. Such devotional service is situated on a higher platform than that of empiric philosophical speculation. Anyway, there are stages of bhakti. That's also been discussed by our acharyas, even within Brahma's prayers. We're also in the regulative stage, etc., etc. But the stage of the residents of Vrindavan is superlatively exalted. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching. That's the Bhagavatam's teaching. That's what our acharyas are sharing with us. So now I'm going to read the purports, the commentary on this text 35, and see if there's some discussion. Krishna is considering, perhaps you do not want to say, if I can attain the dust of the feet of the inhabitants of Braja, but please answer one thing that I am asking now. What reward can you give to the inhabitants of Braja? This is the question I ask you. So this is Brahma speaking. I'll do it again. Brahma speaking to Krishna. Perhaps you do not want to say, if I can attain the dust of the feet of the inhabitants of Braja. But please answer one other thing that I am now asking. What reward can you give to the inhabitants of Braja? This is the question I ask you. Krishna replies, Brahma, though you are knowledgeable of the meaning of the Vedas, you cannot understand the answer. Brahma, our mind, not only my mind, but Lord Shiva and the four Kumaras and others are bewildered about this. What is the state of our minds? Our minds have become bewildered trying to think of what type of reward you could give to them from anywhere or any time, as you are the final reward to all. And you have already given yourself as their son since eternity. But if there is some other thing you have worthy of giving, you should give it to them. But there's nothing else you could give them, since you've already given yourself. Thus our minds are bewildered. Krishna replies, Oh Brahma, you are really ignorant of the truth. Knowing they would manifest such astonishing spontaneous devotion, I have in advance given myself to them as their son. They are satisfied with this. I am knowledgeable about what to do in the future. In this way, I have defeated you. Brahma's reply, Oh, Krishna, if you talk like this, this is how I answer. You are certainly doing what is proper, but through Putana, though Putana was sinful, just by imitating a devotee, she and her family attained you personally. But the inhabitants of Braja, who gave up all attachments such as house, wealth, friends, objects, body, mind, for you, out of great affection, also attained you. The same body that you have given to the low, sinful Putana, you also gave to the most exalted jewel-like inhabitants of Braja. This is, in essence, highly improper. Acceptance of your indebtedness to them is your atonement. How's that? Elsewhere he says, he asks the question, how is Krishna going to repay? The answer is, he cannot. In other words, the love of the residents of Vrindavan are so exalted, not only they conquer the unconquerable, he gives himself to them and his repayment is his indebtedness to them. Here's Jiva Goswami's commentary. And that's then one more after that. O Lord, what can you give to the people of Braja, whose houses, possession, friends, dear ones, bodies, sons, life, heirs, and hearts are dedicated only to you, since there is nothing superior to you or Braja, which you have already given them? Thinking of this, my mind becomes bewildered. You awarded yourself even to Putana and her family members because she wore the disguise of a nurse. Krishna, if I give you the dust of their feet as the highest objective, that was his verse 34, what can I give to them in exchange? Previously you said that you praise me in order to attain me. Now you ask for the foot dust only. Your steadiness is very good. Fearing such a joking question from the Lord, Brahma recites this verse. Lord joking with him. Should I say it again? Oh, he'll say it again. Brahma is anticipating that Krishna may tease him. If I give you the dust of their feet as the highest object, what can I give them in exchange for what they have given to me? Previously you said that you praise me in order to attain me. Now you're asking for their foot dust. Oh, your steadiness is very good. So now he's saying this particular verse. And then the commentary goes to that verse of Uddhava. Same message. Same message Brahma, same message Uddhava, in back-to-back verses. They're both in very exalted position, and they're understanding the merciful nature of Krishna, and the very, 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 10 times very special love of the residents of Vrindavan. How will Krishna reciprocate with that? If Putana attained your shelter, what can be said of others? She, along with her members, past and present, attained you by your mercy. Others in her family, who are enemies of the Lord but obedient to her, attained the same Lord. However, Bhaka and Agha, wearing contrary clothing, attained only liberation. Only liberation. That the Agha attained Sayuja Mukti, that kind of liberation. Suhrit means one who gives benefit without asking for anything. Piraha means an object of affection. All people in Braja spontaneously regard you as their only treasure, their object of affection, and you regard each of them as a treasure. Thus, listen to this logic, they are complete, but you cannot repay them and remain as if incomplete. What will you give them? Thinking that you are under their control because of debts to them, I have surrendered to the dust of their feet to have my desires fulfilled in relation to you. You got it? Person A is a debtor to person B. And if I want to get, you know, the mercy of person A, I go to person B and collect some debt from person B so I can get the benefit of person A. I have surrendered to the dust of their feet to have my desires fulfilled in relation to you. It should be understood that there is an unfailing bond between Krishna and the people of Braja, defeating the question. At the beginning of this paragraph, Brahma presents the highest conclusion. What's that? The prema of the people of Vraja, which controls Krishna, is the highest fruit. This ajita becomes jita. The unconquerable becomes conquered. And how does it, so that verse spoken by Brahma in the beginning of this chapter is speaking about the means to attain the goal, and the Brijbasis have attained the goal. And they're most elevated within that region of the goal. That is, they purchased Krishna. They control, they're not like, I want to control Krishna, so I think I'll be a Brijbasi. They're not thinking like that. But their love is so intense that they have purchased Krishna. He's obliged to them. I am their protector. That's what is being said here at the end. Here's Sanatana Goswami. Brahma is speaking. My mind is bewildered. It cannot determine with certainty. Controlled by debts to them, you give up persons like me and remain in Gokula. Thus my mind is bewildered with extreme lamentation and sadness. Putana, Bhaka, and Agha attained the Lord. Bhaka and Agha attained the Lord by his touch. Even though she hated the devotees desiring to kill them, Putana, and even her family members, who were famous for killing children, attained you. The reason was, she gave her breast for feeding Krishna. This was already explained. One can only attain the Lord by having a favorable attitude to the Lord. But they didn't have a favorable attitude, except slight. Putana, slight. And she's the two brothers are her brothers, so they get her benefit. I mean, how merciful is Krishna? She was made to attain Krishna by becoming non-different from him by developing a favorable attitude to him. The favorable attitude was she wanted to act like mother. Although the intention was to kill him. She had some, it said, when she saw the beauty of Krishna lying in the crib, she was, such a beautiful child. Let me kill him. For just a moment. If you give similar things to them, then you are equal, showing gratitude. But this does not accomplish your special, famous compassion. So, what's being said here with this little summary? All of these verses, starting with text 31 to the end, it's just various features of the exalted nature of the residents of Vrindavan. He's in Vrindavan. This is Lord Brahma. He created a universe. In the home we were at yesterday, there's a young boy, he's reading a book about Elon Musk and his plan to go to space. You know about that? There's a fellow, a rich guy, and he's building a spaceship, a rocket, to go out into outer space. Not the government, but a guy. And he wants to do some, I don't know what, some space exploration. So this little boy, how old is he? 7, 8 years old? What? Something like that. How old are you?
Nine.
You're 9. So, a couple years younger than you. He's interested in space travel. But, you know, where does space come from? It's a product of Brahma. What Brahma's interested in is understanding the limits of the person who he got the power to create the universe from, and it's unlimited. So he visits him in Vrindavan and is appreciating A, Krishna's unlimited greatness, and B, the super greatness of the residents of Vrindavan. Because by their love, they have controlled, conquered, made Krishna their debtor. And the only way he can pay back is to remain indebted to them. He can't pay back. It's too much. I just stay your debtor. So he gives himself completely to them, and they give themselves completely to him, and it's most unique. It's not to say that outside of Vrindavan, the love for Krishna is not pure. It's not to say that, well, Rukmini is a nice devotee, but, you know, she's perfect. She's also the Lord's potency, internal potency. But the intensity of the, and the quality of the love of the residents of Vrindavan is so special. There's detailed descriptions by our acharyas that, Rukmini gets it. I mean, in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, where Krishna is gathering, there's a section where he's called the queens of Dwarka, all 16,107 of them, and Satyabhama is off playing hard to get, so he calls her and chastises her. He wants them to understand the nature of his love for the residents of Vrindavan, and particularly the gopis. And Rukmini amongst them all, she gets it. That is, their intensity of love is not that the queens don't have intense love. The intensity and selflessness of their love for him is unparalleled. Just like Kunti can't fathom the nature of the love of Mother Yashoda. Because Kunti, in relation to Krishna, is his aunt. So she has natural motherly relation to her nephew. But she can't understand the love of Mother Yashoda and how Krishna feels in his relationship with Mother Yashoda. How he cries when she's holding a stick. It's right in her prayers to Krishna. I don't understand. Brahma is also speaking, I don't understand, other than understanding their love is the most exalted. I want to get the dust from their feet, and by getting the dust from the feet, I'll get that quality of love for you, and when I have that quality of love for you, then I'll have the association of you. I want that. So rather than just asking for his association, he is asking for the dust of the feet of the residents of Vrindavan. But he's not just going up to them and asking for dust. He's expressing this extreme humility. So it's wishing to be a blade of grass. So I can't imagine, you know, any Hare Krishna devotee today standing before the deity in the temple saying, please allow me to come a blade of grass in Vrindavan. But Brahma's praying like that. And Uddhava's praying like that. And so that is the exalted nature of the love of the residents in Vrindavan as our estimation or appreciation of that love of the residents in Vrindavan goes higher and higher, and not just say it, but feel it. It helps us become elevated in our Krishna consciousness. And as we become elevated and mindful of those residents of Vrindavan, then the attraction for the temporary slackens because it's nothing compared to that. Now it's easy to get back to business as usual, but the more we go on with the hearing process, the more consciousness becomes elevated and cleansed and attracted to transcendence, attracted to the love of the residents of Vrindavan. That's what happened with Lord Chaitanya and his associates. By his association, they became attracted like that. And similarly, his elevated devotees can awaken that attraction through sound. Okay, let's see if there's some discussion. Nice topic, huh? Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, elevated by our acharyas and Lord Brahma.
but it has a question, he said, before the class.
Go ahead.
So I heard that some people say like this, they can fix speak to Krishna. So
you heard that people say something about Krishna?
No, so my mom said when she ever speaks to Krishna, she can feel that he's speaking back to her.
She speaks to Krishna and Krishna speaks back to her.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I just want to know how my mom can hear him.
I don't know. She's got a special. You got a special mom. What language does she speak in? Did you ask her? Does she speak in Sanskrit? Does she speak in English? Does she speak in Hindi?
I don't know which language.
Ask her that question. What language does she speak in? When Krishna speaks back to her, what language?
I think she speaks...
Not you, your mom. Your mom speaks and Krishna speaks back, right? So what language does Krishna speak back in?
Probably Sanskrit.
Sanskrit. Does your mom know Sanskrit?
Or probably Telugu.
Probably?
Telugu.
Huh? Telugu. Okay. But Krishna knows all languages, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He knows the languages of all animals. Mm-hmm. Everything. Because he's the source of everything, so he knows everything. You have to ask your mom what Krishna says. What's the Krishna channel that she tunes into?
She mostly the channel she tunes into, like when she hears Krishna lectures and everything.
She hears lectures about Krishna. That's what she's hearing.
Oh, lectures about Krishna. Okay. Okay. Then it's in English. Most likely. Okay. Do you listen to lectures about Krishna? Sometimes. Not so often. Uh-huh. Okay. Anything from your father?
Sai Krishna Maharaj, in the lecture you said, like the unconquerable Krishna can be conquered by exhibiting ecstatic pure love for him.
Yes.
Similar to the residents of Vrindavan.
Yes.
So, in my case, like I have accumulated so much of dust all through these years, right? So, and so much of impurity within me. And how can I really render pure devotional service to Krishna?
By becoming pure, then you can render pure. The how-to is in the verse. It's two main things. Leaving aside, throwing far away, is the literal meaning. Udapasya namanta eva. Throwing far away the speculative tendency and staying, it's three things. Staying in your position, stane stitak. So you're a householder and you have an occupation, etc., etc. So you don't have to leave that to the side. You leave the speculation to the side. And then commit yourself or invest time, energy, thoughtfulness in the hearing process from qualified persons. And that's the purification. And then from the purification, then the dedication of body, mind, and words. Tanu van manobhir. Body, mind, and words. So that's how to become pure. And when one becomes pure, by that becoming pure, one can conquer the unconquerable Krishna. He likes one who tries to do like he likes for his pleasure. So that's how that purification comes. Is that right?
Thank you, Maharaj.
You can go back and look at the verse. It's 10:14.3, or it's in Chaitanya Charitamrita also, Madhyalila 8, text 67. A very important verse. Very important verse.
Maharaj, one more question. Are the emotions at the subtle level or the gross level? Emotions?
Yeah.
Or at subtle level or gross level?
Well, their emotion itself is on the subtle level, because the mind is subtle. But they act through the gross level. I mean, you read Nectar Devotion, like when one becomes angry, the fist becomes clenched. I mean, they're physical symptoms that are indicating the emotional symptoms. And that's the science of rasa, is one can understand the ecstatic mood based upon physical expressions. Yeah? Or there is the saying, the face is the index to the mind. You've heard that one before?
Yes.
So someone looks, you know, astonished, or someone looks angry, or someone looks happy, or someone looks sad. So it's that the emotion is the subtle, but it manifests itself in the external realm as well. But it's driven by the subtle. So emotion is in the subtle level. Okay.
This is Radha's question, Atulya Mataji's daughter. Are all the wives of Krishna expansions of Radharani?
All the gopis are expansions of Radharani. And in response to her question, a very mysterious pastime is arranged by Krishna where the gopis somehow by this means, that means, and the other means eventually become wives of Krishna. It's very mysterious. So not yes, but in a mysterious way.
And this is Kim Sharma, Mataji. Is it fair to conclude then that ultimate spiritual desire should be to become a humble blade of grass in the holy dham of Vrindavan?
Well, not the ultimate spiritual desire. The ultimate spiritual desire is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's expression, Gopi Bhartur Pada Kamala Yor Das Das Anudas, to become a servant of the servant of the servant of the gopis. So to be the servant of the servant of the servant can mean, you know, you serve one who's dear to one who's dear to one who's dear to our, you know, the cyclic succession, because that's their position also. How Uddhava prays and how Brahma prays is very special. It's not like that's the ultimate. It's the purpose of that is to attain the mercy of the residents of Vrindavan. So however you get the mercy of the residents of Vrindavan, one of the principal methods for us is just chanting Hare Krishna. Chant Hare Krishna without offense. Make that the aspiration. Chant the holy name without offense, and love of God will awaken. It's described like that right in Nectar Devotion. any one of these five primary activities without offense, spontaneous love for Krishna awakens. Perform any one of these five things without offense. That's an aspiration worthy of any one of us.
This is Kirti Prabhu. The ecstatic symptoms of bhakti, like hair standing on end and voice choking up, etc., like those exhibited by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, are they exhibited by the residents of Vrindavan as well?
Yeah. Not in the same degree, because he, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was in the mood of Radha, and the mood of Radha is not experienced by anyone that's even the residents of Vrindavan. It's Mahabhava, and she's unique. But symptoms of Bhava, yes. Yes.
And this is second question from Kirti Prabhu. In Bhagavad Gita introduction, Srila Prabhupada mentions about Anandamaya and Chinmaya planets. Could you please explain these, and also what is the difference between these two?
I'd have to look at the reference before answering that question. But, well, I'll look into it. Maybe we'll take it up tomorrow. He can send me the page number and the paragraph, and so I can take a look. Make it easy for me.
Then this is Krishna Sakhi Mataji. While chanting Mahamantra, what should be our focus?
The Mahamantra. Hearing. That should be our focus. Absorbed hearing. Rapt attention in hearing. That should be our focus.
This is Sasireka Mataji. After hearing Krishna Katha, consciousness gets elevated. But the moment we start doing other activities besides Krishna consciousness, mind again falls into original position. How can we always stay in elevated consciousness in all circumstances?
It's very similar to his question. It's, you know, pure consciousness. When consciousness becomes pure, we can move from one activity to the next activity to the next activity seamlessly, because what's driving the activity is conscious, pure consciousness. So distracted consciousness will result in distraction, and pure consciousness will result in focus, undeviating focus. So practice, especially in attentive hearing. And that will help elevate consciousness so it stays always elevated, regardless of what you're doing.
This is Amara Mataji's question. How can I stay focused while hearing? Many times, mind signs off. And when it comes back, sometimes it's hard to find the link.
Well, it's abhyasa, continual practice, as Krishna says. Just keep practicing and practicing. That's, you know, by practicing initially it's mechanical, and then comes. So it's, her question is the theme of this next festival of the holy name. Let's see what coronavirus allows. But if it happens in July, that's the theme. The eagerness or the yearning is what her message is. And we continue to strive by right means. We're assured of success, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. And then we need enthusiasm. Striving by right means with enthusiasm. Okay?
And there are two Bhagavatam questions from Sandhya Mataji. The first question is, from Narada Muni's personal story, we learn that all the great rishis like Marichi, Angira, Atri, etc., and Narada himself all go into the body of Vishnu at the time of annihilation. It appears similar to the jiva souls in the material world. Aren't these sages eternal beings in the spiritual bodies?
I'd like to see the scriptural reference that says what she says it says to respond. She can send the reference, because I'm not sure she's got it right.
And the second question is, Vamana Dev asked Prahlad Maharaj also to accompany his grandson Bali Maharaj and live in the Sutala planet. The Sutala planet is lower than the earth planet.
Yeah.
Even though Lord himself is protecting them there, why Prahlad Maharaj did not go to Vaikuntha planets, to the Lord's abode?
He wants, well, what he does, what the Lord wants him to do, and eventually he goes to the Vaikuntha planet. That's described in the section, the seventh canto section of Prahlad.
Kasturi Manjari Mataji's question, I don't feel I have any humility. How to cultivate genuine humility?
There's different ways of answering that question. You know, the reality, to acknowledge the reality, we're very tiny. I mean, I'm tempted to tell the story. In New York and Los Angeles, Prabhupada was asked the same question. He gave the same answer in both places. Prabhupada's answer, he drew the big picture. He said in the spiritual world, there's unlimited vastness of spiritual sky and unlimited spiritual planets, and that vastness of spiritual sky, and largest of all those planets is Goloka Vrindavan. And in one corner of this vastness of the spiritual sky, there's a cloud of the material energy called Mahatattva. And in that cloud of that's in one corner of the vastness of the spiritual sky, Mahavishnu reclines on the causal ocean. And from the pores of his body come unlimited numbers of universes. And amongst those unlimited universes, there's one universe in which we are at present. And in that one universe, there's countless numbers of planets. And one of those planets is the Earth planet. And the Earth planet has seven continents, and one of those continents is North America. And in North America, one of the countries in North America is United States. And amongst the United States, there's one state called New York State. In New York State, there's one city called New York City. And New York City has so many streets, and here we're standing on Mott Street, and you're asking me, how can I become humble? Or in the Los Angeles, it was, you know, the state of California and the city of Los Angeles and so many buildings. And here we are in one building and you're asking how to be humble. We're tiny. And not just materially, even spiritually, we're very tiny. So that's reality. And if you're having a hard time acknowledging reality, think a little bit about the big picture. And we're quite insignificant. And as many times as you need to contemplate the big picture, contemplate the big picture. It's one of the things that we see with Brahma. When Krishna showed his unlimited opulences, he was flattened. Although he has, you know, opulences that are far greater than any one of us combined. Krishna's opulences are unlimited. We're very tiny. Cultivate humility by recognizing how tiny we are.
This is Ashish Yadav Prabhu. Did Krishna ever go back to Vrindavan after he left for Mathura to kill Kamsa?
Yes. Jiva Goswami describes. And he describes in his Bhagavatam commentary, after he killed Kalanemi, he went back. Because he killed Kalanemi just outside of Mathura city, and so Krishna decided to go into Mathura city. He went in Brijbasi attire. He spent some time with them. He made arrangements for the expansions from the spiritual, from the heavenly kingdom to return to the heavenly kingdom, and the devotees to go into their uppercut position before he departed this world. So, yes. And in Gopal Champo, there's a whole section where he also describes Krishna returns to Vrindavan. In Brihat Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami says he regularly returns and goes back to Mathura and then goes back. So, of course, these are leelas, and it's not like the primary message that we hear in Srimad Bhagavatam, but it's the detail is presented by our acharyas. Yes, he returned. Keep going.
I just had a question, Guru Maharaj.
Okay.
When we were describing about Brahma offered prayers and glorifications and Krishna did not really
reciprocate.
Meaning, did not show any expressions. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was wondering about how to understand the gravity of spiritual personalities, because
one might think, well, gosh, you know, why you're not saying anything? Didn't even say Hari Bol. Like that? Gravity?
Yeah.
Krishna or Brahma or what? Devotees, general?
In general, because even when I was reading about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's meeting with Gaur Krishna Das Babaji Maharaj, he was very grave in the beginning. So there is this quality of gravity in spiritual personalities, and I was...
Well, there are personality types, as we know. Some people are more social, some people are more private. Some people are very talkative, and some people are shy and chill. Some people are grave, and some people are very lighthearted. They're different natures. And even those natures may be exhibited and then withdrawn. I mean, Prabhupada would smile and laugh, and Prabhupada would seem very serious. And they're like, you know, so many moods. But the moods was, you know, in relation to Krishna and in service to Krishna kind of moods. So, Bhaktisiddhanta, it's right in that Hare Krishna movie, gravitas. Yogeshwar uses that word. And then he shows this picture. He's like very somber. But then, you know, there's different moods even within Bhaktisiddhanta. So how do we understand gravity as a mood? Well, we don't even know what's going on inside. That's one thing. I remember somebody saw a photograph of Prabhupada. It was seated outside the 22nd Avenue in that back little courtyard place, and his room is up there. And the devotee said, Swamiji, I thought people that are spiritual elevators are supposed to be very joyful, and, you know, you look really serious over here. And Prabhupada's statement, that was a moment of ecstasy. So we can't tell what's going on inside by the outside. But, you know, there's, in any case, there's different moods that are inspired by Krishna in reciprocation with a devotee for, you know, Krishna's reasons. There may be some other answer, but that's my thought. Yeah.
one more question.
Yeah. Did you find the reference?
Yeah. This
I don't see it, so I'll discuss it later. That's okay. I'll discuss it later. Okay.
And there's a few questions online. One is, do the rivalry actions or chivalry actions of jivas such as Indra, Brahma, Duryodhana, etc., who partake in the pastimes of the Lord, subjected to karmic reactions? Meaning, what I understand is when Duryodhan, Brahma...
Well, they're not in the same category. Duryodhan is averse to Krishna, big time. He's averse to Krishna in his aversion to the Pandavas. And aversion to the Pandavas is aversion to Krishna, as far as Krishna is concerned. And Indra was proud. And Brahma was curious. So that, you know, their positions, it's not chivalrous, it's a very, very different position. You know, Duryodhana was just nasty. And Indra was proud. So it's not chivalry.
So, are they just acting according to Lord's will to fulfill the Leela?
No. Indra was proud. And Brahma was curious. And Duryodhana is a demon.
They are subject to karmic reactions.
Yeah. Well, for sure Duryodhana. And, you know, Krishna dealt with Indra in such a way that he received the blessing of Krishna in a very unique and special way.
And this question is from Natavara Prabhu's daughter. Does Krishna ever get bored of being God?
Does he ever get bored? Is boredom, you know, one of the emotions that is part of Krishna's repertoire? Boredom sounds, I would think boredom is just a negation. Probably there's a spiritual emotion that's not boredom, but boredom is the perverted reflection of a spiritual emotion, some spiritual emotion. Because everything here has its counterpart in the spiritual world. So he, in one sense, when he was not so much interested in the elevated prayers of Brahma, but wanted to go again take part in the pastimes with the cowherd boys, he patiently heard. Doesn't mean he was bored. We might get bored. Someone goes on and on and on. Like, we want to go have fun. So we're like not really tuned in because we want to do something that for us looks like fun. So something like that. Bored. My answer is it's whatever Krishna experiences, boredom is a perverted reflection. It's not the essence of Krishna's feelings about himself or his position. He's Atma Rama, not bored.
There's one more question that I have, Guru Maharaj. So from hearing about both morning and evening classes, Lord Brahma and Rajavasis, and I felt like just being in mood of service itself seems like acting in relationship, just being in the mood of service. And there's nothing extraneous to be done. But what happens with me is there is this disturbance that happens because of lower nature or expectations. So I'm wanting to hear how to progressively cultivate mood of service.
Well, you commit yourself to it, and you're halfway there. And when you find yourself self-centered instead of service-centered, then do a pause. Say, where is this self-centered coming from? And, you know, uproot it. And go back to the mood of service. Or invest in the mood of service. And the cleansing process of hearing and chanting is our saving grace. Because on our own, uprooting unwanted tendencies is an endless struggle. So make the effort and seek the purification process, hearing and chanting, good association. Any concluding something over there? Anything? You're good. Okay. You have something?
I was just wanting to clarify my understanding regarding the intense greed.
Intense greed.
Yeah. So at my level, I'm thinking intense greed means quality performance devotion service. Because like sometimes I see that greediness looks to be like, and I don't want to, you know, be in this, you know, present material situation, things like that. So
no, that's not what. That, as I mentioned in the morning class, I think it was yesterday, one of the morning classes, our sense of what the goal is unrefined. It's filtered through modes of nature and selfishness. So what greed really is, we don't really have a clear picture of what it really is. And so it's not just something other than the negation of, you know, this is a horrible place, let me get out of here. And I'm greedy to get out of here. But it's in another platform altogether. Therefore, it's a little, you know, let's just say eager or enthusiasm. And then even our sense of enthusiasm, which is a milder form of greed, we also could just be like passion, result-oriented, I'm at the center, result orientation. That's enthusiasm from the lens that we look at. That's not really what enthusiasm is. A picture of what greed is to look at the residents of Vrindavan, and they have it. The term that's used here again and again and again by our acharyas, I'm sure there's a Sanskrit term, possessiveness. You know, there's no other shelter. There's nothing else for them. That's greed. Okay. Prabhupada ki jai.